is supported by Rick's Tire Service, family-owned and operated on State Route 30 between Roxbury and Grand Gorge. Tires, mounting, and wheel balancing for cars, trucks, lawn, garden, farm, and construction vehicles. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. More information at 800-LG-TIRES, 800-LG-TIRES. WIOX is supported by Mountain Flame in Arkville, featuring a range of products for home heating solutions. A variety of fireplaces, wood stoves, and gas and pellet stoves are available and on display. For sales and service, Mountain Flame in Arkville, warming home since 1980. Details at mountainflame.com. WIOX is supported by Chappie's Good Food Cafe in Roxbury. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. Indoor dining, outdoor dining, pickup, delivery. Open weekdays at 12 noon, weekends at 11 a.m. With a menu designed to be eclectic with simply prepared quality ingredients. Wings, pizza, burgers, and steaks. Local smoked trout, crab cakes, and daily fish specials. Local beers and special cocktails. Chappie's Good Food Cafe, Main Street in Roxbury. Chappie'sGoodFood.com. 607-326-7020. 607-326-7020. WIOX is supported by Qualterry's Nursery and Garden Center on Route 30 in Roxbury. Open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Large and small trees, shrubs and perennials, houseplants and pottery, wind chimes and birdhouses, trellises and tools. Qualterry's Nursery and Garden Center, Route 30 in Roxbury. Smiles required. 607-326-4282. 607-326-4282.
Hi, this is Carol Seitz, host of The Rabbit Hole, Monday mornings at 10 on WIOX Roxbury, live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, WIOXradio.org, and MTC Cable Channel 20.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20 and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi on smart devices through the Radio FM app and everywhere at WIOXradio.org where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good. How are you?
Weather's beautiful, man.
This is perfect for the beginning of summer.
This is rare summer weather right here. No humidity, clear. It's great.
Yeah. So what have you been seeing in the woods?
I went fishing and did well. I like going fishing right after a rain. And got a bunch of brown trout and came home, mixed them up with some breadcrumbs, olive oil, some red wine, and we had a whole meal, man.
Cool.
Yeah. for the family, which is, you know, six people. So it was good. I can't complain. What about you?
Really, nothing much out of, since last week has changed. I did a little fishing as well with my dad. Didn't do as well as you did, obviously, but that was about it.
Yeah, for Father's Day, I went out with a friend, another father, and went on a stream, got some brook trout, you know, one brown trout and a couple of brookies, and so that was a nice day as well.
Did you go for a hike up into a mountain stream somewhere?
Yeah, not far, in the Rondout watershed, and yeah, that was fun.
That's good, cool.
But on a downside, I just want to tell people that Hemlock Willie Adelgid has now vigorously entered west of Highmount, Ulster County, and is in Delaware County, making its presence known. It's always been here a little bit, but it was always better on this side of the mountain than the Ulster and Sullivan County side of the mountain. But it is now in the Delaware watershed quite a bit this year. I mean, it is really spreading.
So what does that mean for landowners?
Well, if you have individual trees, you can make arboricultural treatments with insecticides or a basal bark spray. Catskill Forest Association does that work through its Tree Saver program. But for forestry, we're just going to have to wait for a biocontrol and watch the demise of hemlock over 8 to 12 years usually kills the tree. But if you can catch it early on an arboricultural basis, legacy tree near your house, yeah, treat it.
Okay. Well, it's good to know. I mean, what exactly is the Adelgid, and what does it do, and why is it a threat?
It's a tiny insect that lives in white cotton-like stuff you see on the needles. It's that white cotton-like stuff, and it overwinters in that, but then the crawlers or whatever, they suck the life out of the tree through the needles. Okay. The good thing is it does take a while to kill the tree, 8 years, but it's not so good.
All right. Well, keep our eyes out.
Yeah, you can see it plainly right now, white cotton-like stuff. But tonight's topic is carbon market exchange for landowners with NCX, and tonight's guest is Alex McIntosh. He's a graduate of Harvard University and the director of landowner services at NCX, formerly known as Sylvia Terra. Alex focuses on strategy and execution initiatives that engage forest landowners of all sizes in NCX. And let me see if I can get Alex on the line. Alex, are you there?
Hey, Ryan. Yeah, this is Alex.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you for taking the time. And where are you calling from, Alex?
I'm actually calling from San Francisco, California. So your summer weather commentary was interesting to me. Usually summers out here are foggy and gross, but I'm looking at my window and it's pretty sunny here, so it sounds like we've got the same summer vibes going, which is nice.
Yeah, I'll take it. So how's life out in California? I didn't realize you're calling from that far away.
Yeah, things are good. The NCX team is actually distributed across the U.S. We've got some folks in, you know, East Coast, Washington, D.C. We've got folks in New Mexico. We've got folks in the Midwest. So we all connect virtually and whatnot. But yeah, things are good out here in California. Starting to get back to normal with the pandemic, which is really nice. And yeah, I can't complain.
So before we get into the meat of the show, Alex, what got you into all this?
Yeah, so I previously worked in agriculture services for a company out here in the Bay Area, but I'm originally from Canada. Up in British Columbia, and actually grew up on Vancouver Island, where the forestry industry is pretty dominant. And my uncle's a forester, and so I always had an interest in forestry and forest management. Made my way to San Francisco and got to work at some neat technology firms, and had been looking for ways to apply that background to forestry. And the Sylvia Terra, or then Sylvia Terra, now NCX team. Was a perfect fit for my interest, and you know, they've worked in this space for over a decade now, and so I had the opportunity to join the team back in December, and it's been a really fun ride since.
And I take it NCX stands for Natural Capital Exchange?
Yeah, that's right. I'm still working on my pitch for the new name. I find myself saying Sylvia Terra a lot, so I'll try not to trip myself up on the call tonight.
And, yeah, can you tell us a little bit about NCX, how they started, how many people are working there and whatnot?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're up to, I think, a little over 25 employees now. We started the year with, I think, 12. It's been a big 6 months for us. But sort of backtracking a little bit, our team really got started over a decade ago, like I said, with our two co-founders, Max Nova and Zach Parisa, meeting at the Yale School of Forestry and working together on using remote sensing technology to better measure forests. And that led us into partnerships and projects with NGOs, governments, with large landowners, you know, industrial landowners, and you know, TIMOs and REITs. We did some work for them, basically using remote sensing technology to get more accurate inventory assessments for landowners of, you know, various sizes. We work with consulting foresters. We've developed a product it's called Plot Hound that maybe folks on the show have heard of before. But ultimately, what that led us into was getting to work on some of the inventory side of things with conventional forest carbon programs that were getting developed over the past few years, and getting a front row seat to that highlighted to us where we saw opportunities to maybe improve some of those programs, and especially leverage our remote sensing technology to build a program that could work for more types of landowners, specifically smaller private family landowners, and so. That led us to where we are today. One other big, you know, inflection moment I'll mention is our work with Microsoft on our Basemap product, which is our inventory or high precision inventory layer of forests across the U.S. They were really, you know, great partner with us on that on the computing side, and that's allowed us to really lay the foundation for all of the stuff we're working on now with the Natural Capital Exchange and our ability to do inventory. Remote inventory work for properties across the U.S.
So what's the long-term goal at NCX?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's tied up in that name, Natural Capital Exchange. As I just finished talking about, our base map capability or product, if you will, allows us to do a lot of interesting things at scale for landowners where we can measure changes on a landscape and measure forest inventory over time. And to start with, we're using that capability to develop this forest carbon program that we'll talk about later tonight. But really, when we chose the name the Natural Capital Exchange because we believe there's more than just forest carbon, in the same way there's more than just timber on a landowner's property. You know, as folks that are listening in, I'm sure know better than we do, just all the different competing priorities on a landscape, and you know, managing for those different priorities, and knowing that there's a real benefit that forest provides beyond just the timber or just the forest carbon. So long term, we see our program and platform developing to be really a menu of options for forest landowners to come and potentially be paid for contracts to improve wildlife habitat, improve water yield in their county. Now, out here in the West, the big one that we talk a lot about is reducing wildfire risk. And there are different ways that landowners can engage in those programs today, but you know, they lack some of the ease of enrollment that we'd like to bring to bear with our program being pretty straightforward and for administering across a bunch of different types of landowners.
John, what do you think?
I'm trying to wrap my head around everything right there. So what's kind of the business model? Like how does it function with landowners specifically? I guess I'm sure we're going to get more involved with that and as we talk throughout the show, but 1,000-foot level, what's going on here?
Yeah, good question. So a landowner today would read a little bit more about our program. And like I said, right now we're focused on forest carbon. And so the way we get a landowner enrolled in that effort is they would submit on our online platform, submit some pretty basic property information. So with a boundary of a landowner's ownership and some contact information, we can pretty efficiently run an assessment of what we think is the inventory on the property and then the sort of likely volume of harvest that would occur in the coming year. And then we give landowners the opportunity to defer that harvest as a way to create carbon credits that are then sought out by buyers on our exchange. And that's one specific example of applying our marketplace to forest carbon. You could imagine another another, in a few years when we have other programs that are available to landowners. They're enrolling in a program. They're providing some basic information about their property. We're doing a remote assessment of some sort, and then connecting a landowner with an opportunity to engage in a market on whatever sort of natural capital they're able to generate on their land. And those are markets that today don't really exist for landowners. The reality is that for many folks, there are occasionally programs that work for them, tax programs that work for different management practices and whatnot. But really, the major economic driver for a landowner is the timber sale, and that's not something that maybe every landowner wants to do every year, and so or can do every year. And we think our program will help open up new markets for landowners as we expand.
Alex, who are the buyers mostly?
Yeah, right. That's a good question. Right now, the buyers in our exchange for the forest carbon side are these are Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies that have publicly stated environmental and sustainability goals to reduce, essentially make their sort of net zero pledge. I'm sure you heard a lot of companies doing this. One example we always refer to is Microsoft. As we talked about earlier, we partnered with them pretty closely starting in 2018 to develop our base map, but they've since become more of a partner on the buyer side of our exchange because they have net zero targets for their carbon emissions. And other companies, Shell, Royal Dutch Shell is another example of one that's a big name that folks have heard of. But there are also small companies as well that have stated these sustainability targets, and they've made these voluntary commitments to reduce their emissions. And there's a lot of growth in that market that we're excited about.
So paying someone to defer a harvest, why is harvesting bad? And if so, what about young forest versus old forest? We had Rowan University's Dan Duran on, I think, a couple weeks ago, right, John?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
And he was claiming that young forest sequester more carbon. So it's difficult for the layperson to follow this because we're just not sure. I hear so many things comparing different forest types. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, and I definitely hear you on there. There's so much information out there about these programs and carbon capture, carbon sequestration, net zero, all these buzzwords are flying around. And we're working hard at making this stuff less mysterious to the extent that we can. To your first point, we definitely don't think harvesting's bad. And no one at NCX thinks that harvesting is bad in any way. We actually have a number of foresters on staff that would probably have strong words for me if I came on the show and said harvesting was bad. What we do know, though, is that the extent to which a landowner might change their behavior versus a business as usual scenario, such that they grow their forest a little bit longer, put a little bit more volume on the timber on their landscape, ultimately keep that carbon standing in stocks that just don't get harvested as early as they would have. That creates an environmental change when at scale can have a really meaningful impact. And that's the change in behavior and sort of carbon retention, if you will, that buyers on our exchange are looking to pay for. And so we think of our program really as a tool in the toolbox for consulting foresters, for landowners, looking to sort of balance the challenges of managing a forest, knowing that there's a tricky line you have to draw between, ecologically what's good for the forest and obviously economically what's good for the landowner. So we see ourselves as playing an important role in that.
Can these deferment payments be used for intermediate cuts like thinnings and stuff instead of a final harvest or not?
Yeah, they can. So we'll do our best to assess the likely volume that would come off in a given year, and that'll be inclusive of a thinning or a final harvest.
Okay.
As we get into get into the Catskills or just generally up into New York, Pennsylvania area, it's a real challenge trying to make sure that we're accurately assessing likely harvest volume in the coming year, and that's why we have a growing data science team of some of the best minds in this whole space. These are folks that have PhDs in forest biometrics, and this is their work and their domain. Comparing that to the South, though, for example, we know that there's a little bit more predictability in managing practices down in plantation pine in Alabama, for example. So definitely something that we're working through as we expand the program beyond our initial areas. I also do want to make sure I don't dodge your question about young forests versus old forests. I think your previous guest was totally right in stating that young forests have a really significant role to play in carbon capture. They're, you know, in that vigorous growth stage, they're pulling down a lot of carbon, they're providing real environmental benefit. Our stance right now with our harvest deferral program is that, you know, a landowner who's managing a, you know, 8-year-old stand, they're like, the likelihood that they're going to cut that is effectively zero, and so the payments that need to be paid to a landowner to not cut, there's really no change in behavior that would occur if a landowner was paid to not cut an 8-year-old stand, and so that gets into an important topic with forest carbon programs generally, which is this phrase called additionality, where you want to make sure that a carbon program that's being administered is actually, you know, making a change versus business as usual, which is sort of the magic of all this.
And I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but there was a comment by another researcher, and I might as well ask it, but Gary, I think it was Gary Lovett from the Cary Institute, was claiming that, you know, the problem he had with the deferments was that these areas, like in the Catskills, wouldn't be harvested anyway. But it seems to me, after reading over your literature, your website, that you're just paid, if there's less risk of harvest, then you would be paid less. Is that right, or is it different?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I guess I would slightly clarify that to say that you wouldn't be paid less. You would actually be assessed as having less volume at risk, and therefore, you know, the number of credits you could sell on the exchange would be fewer. So individual price per credit might be the same, but a landowner with, you know, well-stocked, you know, 100 acres, really close to a mill, operable, you know, good transportation networks nearby, that landowner will be assessed as having more volume at risk relative to someone who maybe has a similar tract that's, you know, far away from markets and harder to get a crew out to.
Yeah, maybe Gary can clarify his point more. He'll probably be on the show next month. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is Carbon Market Exchange for Landowners with NCX. So, Alex, and we're talking to Alex McIntosh from NCX. Alex, what's the scope of the carbon market exchange around the country and maybe in New York State if you have those numbers?
Yeah, so I can speak to our program specifically, and I know there are other great programs out there that are targeting that same opportunity we saw in the market, which is smaller, you know, private, you know, non-industrial private forest landowners that had previously been sort of boxed out from these types of programs just due to the cost and cost to administer them and acreage minimums required to get a program together. So, but I can speak to our program. We So at the beginning of the year, January through March, we were focused on rolling out our first commercial scale cycle in the Southeast. But once that closed, we opened up our next cycle over the summer here that actually just closed for enrollment a couple weeks ago. We did assessments for, actually looked at this earlier today, we did assessments for exactly 100 New York landowners. And that included a handful of folks in the Catskills County, so Sullivan, Delaware, Greene, and Ulster counties. I think I saw six or seven at least at a quick glance. So, you know, we were really excited to be back in the region. We did run a pilot program in Pennsylvania in 2020 with 20 landowners to sort of proof of concept this whole program and learn what we could and trying to do it on a small scale before we went to a big commercial scale. So we're excited about already being open with our next cycle, which actually includes the entire contiguous U.S. So landowners across the lower 48 can sign up on our website for a free assessment and then determine if they'd like to proceed with participating in the exchange and reducing their harvest commitment.
And a little demographics I found on your website. 42% of properties are under 500 acres. Is that still true?
Yeah, I think those numbers were from our first cycle, so down in the Southeast. I was looking at the median acreage size from New York landowners in our 21C cycle, so that summer cycle that just closed. It looks like the median acreage size for landowners from New York that participated was in the 150 to 200 acre range, so a little bit smaller. There were bigger ones as well, of course. But yeah, I would say generally speaking, we're seeing a lot of interest from from folks that, like I said, were previously unable to participate in some of these forest carbon programs due to their size.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I believe if a landowner in New York State is enrolled in the New York State 480A Forest Tax Law Program, they can't enroll in this program or not. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually looked that up. Thanks for the suggestion there. That's actually not going to be a problem as far as I understand it, because that program, in my interpretation of it at least, is that it encourages a management plan, encourages sort of scheduled harvesting, but there's a flexibility component where a harvest could be pushed out by a year if needed to participate in our program. So to us, that actually implies that the forest is being actively managed as a working forest, and that's actually, I'd say, a net positive for our program, because ultimately we want to be working with working forests and working with landowners who have an intent to harvest, so that when we give them the opportunity to delay that harvest, you know, they're actually changing behavior versus, you know, working with someone who had no intention of harvesting. And that's not a great fit for us, because it doesn't really let us uphold our promise to buyers.
Yeah, I mean, Alex, if that's the case, there's a lot of landowners that I think would be interested that are in 480A, especially in the southern part of New York State, where there's a lot of forest land and high taxes, such as Region 3 and Region 4, which is the Catskill Mountains and in the Hudson mm-hmm. Valley. So, mm-hmm. yeah,
that's
I could
great.
See that.
We'll have to dig into that one further. As we expand in new regions, we're definitely learning about these different tax programs. I'm aware of one in Michigan that we've been looking at as well, similar to the 480A one in New York. Management plans required. There's sort of a schedule component, but there's flexibility. And, yeah, that's a great fit for our program.
Yeah, I mean, if someone can – I mean, what they're weighing in New York State, a lot of people leveraging a poor harvest or selling the property even worse – is high taxes. I mean, if you can help pay those taxes even more, I would think you're going to keep more or retain more forest land.
That's great. Yeah, that's exactly what we hear from many folks. Is our program isn't going to the payments from our program aren't going to exceed a timber sale, of course, at least not right now. Maybe one day when Microsoft or Netflix or Delta Airlines wants to pay more for the carbon credits, but. At least for now, we know that, you know, landowners say that our payments are great for doing things like covering property taxes, which is great for especially for smaller folks.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is Carbon Market Exchange for Landowners with NCX, and we are talking to their Director of Landowner Services, Alex McIntosh. We're going to take a break, and we'll ask Alex next what makes NCX unique.
In a while. I've got a story, ain't got no mother. Let the bad guy win every once in a while. When it go round in circles, when it fly high like a bird up in the sky. When it go round in circles, when it fly high like a bird. Around. I've got a dance, I ain't got no steps. I'm gonna let the music move me around. When it go round in circles, when it fly high like a bird up in the sky. When it go round in circles, when it fly high like a bird. We'll be right back.
Could it fly high like a bird up in the sky? I've got a song, I ain't got no melody. I'm gonna sing it to my friends. I've got a song, I ain't got no melody. I'm gonna sing it to my friend. When it go round and circle, when it fly high like a bird up in the sky, when it go round and circle, when it fly high like a bird up in the sky. Ooh. Ah. When it fly high like a bird.
That's Billy Preston. Will it go round in circles? I don't know. Seems like he's got melody. I think he's lying. I think, John.
Sounded good.
So this is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John since 2010. You know? It's been 11 years.
I've been around since 2013.
All right, well.
Just a baby.
So, tonight's topic is carbon market exchange for landowners with NCX. We are talking to their Director of Landowner Services, Alex McIntosh. Alex, what makes NCX unique?
Yeah, good question, Ryan. I think three things that come to mind that make our program unique, and we touched on this a little bit in the previous segment. Because we're using our remote sensing capabilities that we've developed over the past decade, we're able to offer this program at no cost to landowners. There's costs that we incur as company, and you know, we have to do some ground measurements in some places, but we kind of bake that into our model and really rely, like I said, on being able to do our assessments mostly remotely. So we can develop a program that landowners aren't going to need to pay for. And, you know, in some forest carbon programs that, you know, you might be looking at multiple years of setup and hundreds of thousands of dollars of setup costs for all the measurements that are required to get that program off the ground. So that's a big difference. Also related to that, there's no acreage minimum for participating in our program, or at least participating in getting an assessment. There is a minimum volume of harvest risk that needs to be, or I should say harvest likelihood that needs to be detected. But we've had folks as small as 15 acres participate and be eligible to submit bids in our exchange. Then probably the most significant change or significant aspect of our program in terms of the uniqueness is our one-year terms. And we would talk to landowners big and small. We learned that 40-year-long contracts or 100-year-long contracts aren't something that folks want to participate in. It's kind of risky to get into a multi-generational contract and agreement like that. And I think increasingly we're also becoming aware of the growth and demand and interest in these forest carbon programs. And I think that a landowner signing a 100-year agreement today might be leaving some of that potential upside on the table. So, those three things, no fees for landowners, no acreage minimums, and the one-year terms.
So what are the penalties, and how does NCX make money?
Yeah, I'll answer the second one first, because it's kind of related to something I just said. We take a small fee from the buyer side of the exchange. As sort of the market maker, so buyer will pledge a volume of carbon credits that they want to purchase through us, and at a certain price, and then we'll try to go and source that supply from landowners that we're working with. And then your first question, can you repeat the first question?
Yeah, penalties. Like, what if you go on your GIS or whatever, you're looking down from the sky and you see Holy cow, man, this guy just harvested. So then what?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So the penalty schedule is it's fairly straightforward. Essentially, if you pledge to defer a certain volume of harvest below your business as usual assessment that we determined at the outset, you wouldn't be paid for that volume that you didn't deliver. And if you, if you significantly underdeliver on your commitment, you would get paid a reduced price per unit that you do deliver. And so that, you know, reduction in price per unit increases as you get closer and closer to, I think, the hard sort of floor is 47.5% of your delivery. And then once you're below that, you wouldn't receive any payments and you'd be at risk of default and potentially getting excluded from the program for a number of years in the future. But we don't think that's going to be, we hope that's not going to be a problem with folks as we roll this out. We know that landowners take this, and certainly with help from their consulting foresters, they're planning this out. They're working this into their management plans. Foresters are playing a really important role in that. And we hope not to have to do any of those penalties. But there are no, currently no plans to charge fees or anything like that to folks either. So we think from that perspective, it's pretty landowner friendly in how we structured it.
Do you have a time buffer as to when their last harvest was? So in 1 to 3 years, for example?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We do run update our base map imagery, which is what we use for inventory measurements. We're working on getting that updated quarterly. Right now, for folks that just participated in our summer cycle, they had to go back to looking at harvest records up until October of 2020. That's when our imagery was up to date, latest as of. So going forward, we're just sort of finalizing the imagery date for assessments that will be starting here in July. But yeah, it's a good question. You typically won't need to go back more than a year, and pretty soon we'll be actually updating our imagery and inventory assessments on a quarterly basis, so there will be effectively no time lag.
That's amazing. Does your base map utilize leaf on or leaf off or anything?
Yeah, we look at a lot of different hyperspectral data. We look at we have multiple different satellite imagery providers that we're pulling in as well. I would need to double check what specific stuff we have in place for some of those hardwood species. But essentially, we're looking at a lot of different sources. We also look at FIA plot data to help inform our assessments, as well as some of our on ground measurements that we've conducted over the years.
All right. So, Alex, can you briefly explain how this actually works? So, a landowner's interested. What do they do?
So a landowner can go to ncx.com to read more about our program, and I definitely recommend folks check that out. Also, if they're working with a consulting forester, definitely recommend looping in the forestry, because this is a significant commitment on your property and something that you want to incorporate into whatever management plan you have already going. But you go to our website, you'll get directed as a landowner to visit our what we refer to as our landowner platform. And that's where you can submit property information, contact information, and really probably the hardest part is identifying your parcels on a map. That we've should be the hardest part. We think we've made it pretty easy. You can get in and click parcel boundaries that are pre-drawn from county tax office and the other data providers. And once you have your boundaries submitted for assessment, we'll take a look at what we think the inventory is and what we think relative to markets and access to transportation networks, past harvest activity, different types of mills within your radius. We'll try to assess what we think is the likely volume that's going to be harvested in the coming year based on all those factors. And that's how we get our sort of individualized business as usual baselines that a landowner then looks at and confirms is accurate, and then at that point, the landowner has the opportunity to reduce their harvesting and sell that sort of reduction in the form of a what we call a harvest deferral credit, which is really the unit of change of behavior that generates the forest carbon credit.
How do you guys go ahead, John?
I was going to ask about ground truthing, like how do you know? I mean, I'm sure there's been all sorts of that done in the past as building your program, but do you do spot checks in any way?
Yeah, that's a good question, John. We do that. We've been doing that over the last like I said, last decade, you know, continually improving our sort of coverage of, with ground measurements. And then also within each program cycle, we also do assessments on the ground for a project area. So to give you an example, in that summer cycle, or sorry, the spring cycle that I referred to that was just in the southeast, we ended up having about 120 landowners get accepted on the exchange as sellers, and they constituted about 1.2 million acres in total. There were some really small landowners and some really big ones. I can't remember what the average acreage was, but in total, we had a 1.2 million acre footprint that we then did cruise design on, and we essentially we designed our cruises in such a way that we were improving the accuracy of our remote assessment of that project area as a whole. And so we did cruise properties for some participants, but not all of them. And those measurements informed how we then going forward would do our remote assessments for those areas specifically. So it's there's a combination of both the ground measurements specifically with participants, ground measurements that we've done sort of throughout regions that we operate in, and that all kind of feeds back into our model for base map.
So, Alex, you mentioned volume. How do you account for, like, grade difference between, you know, what if a person has veneer or, you know, different lower grades of timber? How does that, you just take that off of their deferral, or how does that work?
Yeah, we don't currently, there are a couple things that we can't get at with base map inventory today. Grade is one of them. Age is another one that we can't necessarily get at. So we do have some sort of averaging there that we need to include in our assessments.
Yeah, because that could be a problem in some areas like here where there's hard maple or sugar maple, and grade matters a lot.
Yep, absolutely.
On price.
We hear that one a lot, and we're working on ways to improve that part of our assessment for sure.
So I'm sure someone wants to ask this. What's the average, if you can, payment, I guess? I don't know. How do we go about that? Per acre?
Yeah, good question. And that's one that I know I keep saying that's a good question. I sound like a broken record, but you guys are asking all the right ones. And that's probably the one that landowners care. It's close to the top of their list, for sure. It'll really vary depending on the property. As I've kind of alluded to already, we really try to have our business as usual baseline assessments reflect the realities for any given property. And that could really vary, you know, even in a, you know, move from one watershed to the other, the market access could really change. And we want to make sure that our assessments reflect that. As I said earlier, in the 21C cycle, the one that just closed for enrollment here in earlier in the month, we saw folks probably looking at payments between $5 and $10 per acre, and on average. But definitely want to stress that this will really vary greatly depending on that risk assessment. And we think that it's probably likely that, you know, there was a bit of an influx in interest, you know, from folks that are actively managed. They're really looking closely at our program, and I don't want anyone to, you know, walk away and be like, all right, I'm just going to do the math on $5 to $10 per acre and apply it to my ownership and assume that that's always going to be true. It could be higher, could be lower. The best way to get an accurate assessment of opportunity for your property is just to go to our site and upload your property information. You'll get an eligibility report within a few. Soon you'll get. We'll be starting to send them out in July, and then sending them out on a weekly basis.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is Carbon Market Exchange for Landowners with NCX. We are talking to their Director of Landowner Services, Alex McIntosh, and we're going to take a break. We got more questions for Alex coming up.
For my own, what you want to do. I think I could stay with you for a while, maybe longer if I do. Don't you think the time is right for us to find all the things we thought weren't proper could be right in time? And can you see which way we should turn, together or alone? I can never see what's right or what is wrong. Take too long to see. Amy, what you wanna do?
Just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is carbon market exchange for landowners with NCX, and we're talking to their Director of Landowner Services, Alex McIntosh. Alex, what are some important dates people should be aware of if they're interested in enrolling in this program?
Yeah, the as I said earlier, the current cycle, I keep referring to these terms cycles, we do quarterly sort of fulfillment events. We're open for enrollment. We'll do assessments for properties, and then we'll sort of pick a deadline where folks need to decide if they'd like to submit a bid to reduce the harvesting. We do those quarterly. So the one that just finished, the folks that are signed up to do that one, will their performance period or their one-year deferral will start on July 1st. The one that's currently open, though, folks will have until September 1st to request their assessments, and as I said earlier, you'll get a. We'll start sending out eligibility reports, which detail our business as usual baseline assessment for a property. We'll start sending those out on a weekly basis in early July. Folks will have until September to sign up and request that report, and then I believe September 8th is the deadline for submitting bids. And if you do sign up on our online platform, you'll get emails from our team and helpful resources on sort of how to move your way through the process.
Do they have to submit, does the landowner have to submit all their properties, or how does that work?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that question. I meant to mention that earlier. So, yes, the landowner is required to submit all of the property under their ownership. That doesn't mean that they need to reduce harvesting across their entire property. It's just so that we can monitor harvest activity across all the acres that an individual manager or set of beneficial owners has authority over. And that's so that we can account for what's called leakage, where the landowner has two parcels. They've got parcel A and parcel B, and they only enroll parcel A in our program. But they reduce harvesting there, but they increase harvesting on parcel B, but that wasn't enrolled in the program. The net effect of change in behavior would be zero, but you know, we might incorrectly credit a change in behavior. So long way of saying you're required to submit all of your property for the assessment, but if you have a thinning or a clear cut that you need to do or really want to make space for in the coming year, you would just not bid in all of your eligible carbon volume. Instead, you would make some room for a thinning or a clear cut and just bid in fewer of your credits that you have available to you.
Well, you got about 5 minutes left, believe it or not. And do you know anything about how the Catskills compare to other forested regions?
Yeah, it's a good question. We definitely we learned as we expanded our program to New York and back into Pennsylvania following the pilot. There are challenges like you were talking about earlier with knowing grade or different, knowing different demand for different species, different products at mills in a given region that can really fluctuate and change. And so that's something that, we're going to continue to invest in getting right. I think another area we already touched on is some of the understanding how to engage folks that are working in some of these tax programs. I mean, that we're working on, and not to say that it's different. Many states have these tax programs targeting forest landowners, but we're trying to understand those as much as we can on the local level. I know that in the Catskills, there's a lot of streams and water features that are included in some of these properties that folks own, and we do account for protecting those management zones and bake that into our business as usual assessments as well.
So you guys must have a ton of information. Like, first of all, you must have every single county database in the country, I would imagine, right? To get all the parcel data, just that alone, and then sawmills and everything else.
Yeah. So we have the tax parcel data. We have that from one provider. That's helpful for sure. But landowners are also able to submit shade files or draw on their own property boundaries if our parcel coverage isn't sufficient. The mill database is a really important project for us to continue to maintain and update. And that includes, mill locations, types of mills, whether it's a sawmill or a pulp mill, and then also just knowing the prices being paid at those mills, because that obviously influences the landowner's behavior and transportation networks as well. I can say with certainty there are some very cool maps that we can create at NCX, and our team is, I think, probably skews more towards the map nerds end of the spectrum, if there is such a spectrum.
Hey, you got to have a bunch of map nerds running around, like a lot, right?
Well, I consider myself one of those for sure. I'm actually looking at a map right now on my desk.
I hope everybody gets a nice window, because my GIS professor in college says the GIS guys always get put in the basement. It's very poor for the business.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, we actually had a member of our data science team who recently was working on building a shed in the backyard for his home office. And I mean to ask him if there's a window in there, because every time I get on a call with him, he's got the map in the background, but I don't know where the window is.
Make sure everybody gets a win.
Put him in the basement. One last question here. Where do you see this going, Alex? Looking forward.
Yeah, we're really excited about the journey we're on, and I think for us it's been really encouraging and rewarding to get to work with so many landowners all at once. I talked about previously, as a company, we're focused on more consulting style projects with large landowners, and we'll continue to work with those folks for sure in the spirit of our carbon programs and other programs. But every landowner we talk to feels like there's a place for somewhere that can measure and value the natural capital on their land. And we want to be that partner. And we think that we're well positioned to do it, but it's going to take a lot of feedback and learning from discussions with landowners of all sizes across the U.S. and soon maybe in other countries as well. And so I'm excited about that for sure. I feel like I feel really lucky to get to do the work we do, and especially love getting to engage with landowners and foresters on how to make our program better and serve them better.
All right, Alex, is there anything you want to direct people to, landowners to, before we say goodbye?
No, I mean, I guess I already spoke about our website, ncx.com. I think there's a lot of really interesting resources there, both about our program, but also, you know, if you check out our blog, you can read more about what we're up to and what we're working on. And if you're interested in engaging in the program, you'll see a lot of resources there that direct you to create your free landowner account and get assessed. And you know, we're really excited about the growth we've seen in the first 6 months of this year, and the big ambitions for the rest of this year and beyond. So we'd love to work with you if you're interested.
All right, Alex, thanks for coming on tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. I got to say, the music selection during the breaks, I feel like you just plugged right into my Spotify account or something. So the songs are both close to my heart.
All right. Hey, take care, and thanks again for coming on, Alex.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. And if you missed the show, that was Alex McIntosh from NCX talking about the carbon market exchange. And next week we're going to talk about Cairns of the Catskills. Should be interesting. And that's all I got. Have a good night.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.